Ksuvas Perek Zayin Mishnah Zayin 7:7. And since in the previous Mishnah we had discussed certain scenarios in which a woman would be divorced and not be eligible for a ksuba payment, the Mishnah will now list other scenarios where she would be divorced and not get her ksuba. This particular Mishnah here appears again in Maseches Kedushin, the second parak, Mishnah Hey, word for word. But since it talks about both Kedushin as well as ksuba, it's mentioned in both places. So the first part of the Mishnah says, "Hamekadesh ha'isha al manas she'ein aleha nedarim." If a man is mekadesh a woman, he gives her the kesef, like the ring, and he says, "Hered mekadesh li b'taba'at zu," you're mekadesh to me with this, receiving this ring. But he says, on condition that you haven't got any nedarim that bind you. So when it comes to kedushin, it's absolutely acceptable to make the kinyan of the kedushin, the effecting of the marriage, contingent upon anything actually that the man would stipulate. And here he's stipulating that she's not restricted by nedarim. So that being the case, v'nimtzu aleha nedarim, if it turns out he discovers after the fact that she actually was somehow encumbered with existing nedarim, she had taken a vow, let's say, not to eat meat or drink wine, etc. So then, eina mekudeshes, then she won't, the kedushin won't be effective, and therefore she won't even be mekudeshes, she won't be married at all, because he made that stipulation. Now, when it comes to nedarim, the rule always is that we understand the neder to imply what's normally implied by people using that turn of phrase, a particular, you know, expression. And in this case here, a person who says she's not encumbered by neder, ein aleha nedarim, we assume he is making this kedushin contingent upon the kinds of nedarim that a normal person would object to. Like, for example, she refused to eat meat or drink wine, wear colorful clothing, and so on. If she had some random nether that she took on that has no real impact on his life and would not really make her any weaker or less attractive or less fun to be with. So for example, she just says she's took a nether against never eating strawberries. Haruven, carobs, as the Gemara. So a normal person wouldn't care if his wife doesn't eat strawberries or carobs. And that being the case, even if he made the kedushin contingent upon her not being bound by nedarim, and she actually happened to have taken a neder not to eat strawberries or carobs, still, the marriage would be effective. The kedushin would work because we assume that he wouldn't have meant that when he said it. If, of course, he said explicitly, she has absolutely no nedarim whatsoever, in which case, then, of course, that's leaves no doubt that he means any neder. So then if she had the neder not to eat the carobs or the strawberries, that of course would make it that the kedushin was not effective. What's interesting is that when it comes to nedarim, a person is always able to be matir his or her neder, to annul the neder, if there's a bezin of three hediotos, or even a mumcha, one expert in the halachas nedarim, who can find pesach and charata, under certain circumstances, he's able to say that the neder should never have been bounding in the first place because certain things weren't considered, and now the person regrets having said those words now that they've come, those matters have come to light. That's called charata. We'll discuss more about nedarim be'ez Hashem in Maseches Nedarim. The point is that if a chacham or a bezdin is matir the neder, in contrast to the father or the husband being mefir the neder, but if there's hataras nedarim, if the chacham is matir, if chacham does the hatara, so then the neder is considered to be ne'akar l'mafreya, to be uprooted, annulled from the beginning, meaning retroactively it never took effect. And that being the case, if a woman, let's say, had taken a neder to be a vegetarian, and then the husband's mekadesh her on condition that she has no nedarim that would bind her, and our Mishnah would say if he discovers the fact that she's a vegetarian, it wouldn't be binding. If she then goes, before he discovers it, and if she would go to a chacham and do hataras nedarim, that would retroactively make it that she never was bound by the neder, and therefore the kedushin would, yes, be effective. It's interesting, there are even shittos to say, even after he discovers that she had this neder, if she would go to a chacham, since it retroactively would annul it, it would also still be effective, but the Shulchan Aruch seems to learn that it has to be annulled prior to him discovering it. Whatever the case, the point is that the neder could be annulled, and therefore, and that could make the kedushin be effective after the fact. Now, consistam, what happens if this man never made any stipulations regarding nedarim? He marries her, kedushin, nesuin, she moves in with him, v'nimtzu aleha nedarim, and then he discovers once they're married that she already is bound by neder and she took a vow never to eat meat or drink wine, and now he says, wow, if I'd have known this, I'd have never married her. So then, teitzei shelo b'ksuba, so now he can divorce her and not pay her ksuba. The reason why is because he's claiming that it's what's called a mekach taos, that his act of kedushin when he married her was made under false pretenses, and if he would have known that she was a vegetarian or that she wouldn't drink wine, he would have never engaged her in married her in the first place. That being the case, it's just was made under false pretenses and isn't binding. Now, we don't know for certain if that's the case. Maybe he decided to become a vegetarian originally when he married her. He wouldn't have objected to her being a vegetarian, but later on, you know, one time they're married, then he decided to be a vegetarian. Or maybe, you know, he didn't like her cooking, and the vegetarian thing is just a pretext to get rid of her. So since we don't know for certain what he would have done, we're just only assuming that many normal people refuse to marry women who are vegetarians or don't drink wine or wear clothing, etc. So therefore, the truth is that we're in a situation of suffix. We just don't know. And therefore, when he divorces her, he'll have to give her a get. We won't rely on his claim that it was a mekach tos and accept that and say that the kedusha was never binding, they were never married. No, we're not sure. It's a suffix, and therefore he'll have to give her a get because it's a suffix, an uncertain situation, and the rule is suffix d'oraisa l'chumra. If we are not sure how to do something and it implicates a d'oraisa issue like gittin, the woman, of course, can't marry another man without getting a get because maybe she's already married. So therefore, the first husband, will have to give her a get when he divorces her. On the other hand, since it's a suffix, it's a question mark whether or not he was they were married in the first place, so therefore that draws the ksuba into question, and since the rule is hamotzi mechavero alav araya, in a situation of doubt, we're not sure if she is or is not entitled to her ksuba payment, since she's the one who's trying to extract the money, the burden is on her to prove that the kedushin was binding and that she's entitled to her ksuba, and if she can't do that, then presumably she can't, then as the Mishnah says, when she gets divorced, if you divorce her right now, she won't get her ksuba payment. The second part of the mission now is very similar to the first, but instead of talking about nedarim, which make her undesirable for being a wife, we talk about mumin, certain blemishes, certain essentially physical defects. So the next Mishnah discusses the issue about, well, didn't he have eyes? Didn't he see these things? So we'll put that issue aside. Let's just take it as a given that when he entered into this relationship, he didn't realize she had this blemish, whatever it is. So then, if he gives her kedushin and he says, "Haret mukudesh liba taba adzu," he gives her the ring and says, "You're married to me," on condition that, as the Mishnah says, "Almanas she'ein ba mumin," that she has no blemish. V'nimtzu ba mumin. If it turns out she has a blemish, after all, ein mukudeshes, then like the previous case, the Mishnah, the kedushin will not be binding because he made a contingent upon her not having a blemish, and she has a blemish, so therefore no kedushin whatsoever. The Mishnah will define the kinds of blemishes in a moment, so hold on to that. If, on the other hand, he didn't make any stipulations, he just married her, kedushin, chuppah, and then he's living with her after the wedding, kanasa, he marries her, brings her into his house, stam, without any preconditions, but then v'nimtzu ba mumin, then he discovers, lo and behold, she has some serious physical defect that he didn't know about before, didn't realize, until after she was living in his house. So then, like the previous part of the Mishnah, teitze shlo b'ksuba, again, she goes out without a ksuba, like before. We're not exactly sure if it was really a mekach taos, and he really would have said from the beginning he would never marry if he knew about this. But since it's very reasonable, it's very likely, so we'll assume that being the case. But since it's not certain, it's a suffix, and therefore a suffix derais l'chumra, she needs a get, like the previous case, and since it's a suffix, she won't be able to extract the payment of the ksuba without proof they didn't object. Now, like the previous part of the Mishnah, if it turned out, in the previous part we said if she had a neder, but the neder was sort of inconsequential, the kind of neder most people wouldn't object to, like she won't eat strawberries or carobs, so then she stays married, so too here. He's claiming, oh, her fourth toe was longer than her third toe. And like, if he would have known that, he would have never married her. So then, I guess that's normal. I guess I should say the fourth toe is bigger than the big toe. So then, now that's not really much of a blemish. And maybe he would, maybe some people object, but most people probably wouldn't say, I wouldn't marry a woman who had a long, you know, toe, slightly longer than the other, than the other toe, whatever it is, something inconsequential. So then, that wouldn't be grounds for divorce, wouldn't annul the marriage, and she would not be getting divorced out of ksuba. So what are the mumin, the blemishes, which are considered to be the kind that most normal people would object to, which would be the kind of mumin we're talking about here? And similarly, if he made the condition, she has no mumin, if it turns out she has, you know, whatever, this like this fourth toe is longer than the fifth toe, or whatever, her toenail is discolored or something, so then... presumably that's not the kind of thing a person would object to, and therefore the kedushin will be binding even though he made the condition she has no mum, because that's just, you know, subjective. But what are the, I'll call it the objective lines, that are the kinds of blemishes that a person can be assumed to be makpid on, to really have an objection to? So says the Mishnah, kol hamumin haposlin b'kohanim poslin b'nashim. It's the same list of blemishes which render a kohen unfit to do the avodah. There's a, the Torah says that kohanim, who have a blemish, so certain blemishes, so they are not permitted. They're not allowed to do the avodah in the base of mikdash, and that's actually a pasuk. It's Vayikra Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Tez Zayin 21:16, which says, "Daber al Aaron lemor, tell Aaron, the kohen gadol." Saying, Ish Mizaracha, any of your descendants, the Dorosam, in the generations that come, Asher Yevo Mum, who has a blemish, Lo Yikrav, Lahakriv Lechem, Elokav, should not approach to offer the food to Hashem, meaning the korbanos, the offerings. That is, the pasuk which says, if they have a mum, a blemish, they can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Meseches Bechoros, the seventh parak, is dedicated to a list of these mumin. There are many. I don't want to go through them all now, but they're quite severe. For example, I'll just go through some of them quickly here. If the person applies both to the male Cohen and the female, in the case of our mission here, if he or she has a head that is like triangular or shaped like a turnip or shaped like a hammer or it's sunken in or flat or the person is bald or... they have no eyebrows, or they have a single eyebrow, or they have two backs or two spines, or their eyes, one is high and one is low, or they're severely cross-eyed, or they have one long arm and one short arm, or one long leg and one short leg, or they have no eyelashes, or they have gigantic eyes as big as a baby calf, or tiny eyes as small as a goose, or very, very small limbs relative to their body, or very long limbs relative to their body, or tiny ears, or ears that are kind of like crunched like a sponge, or a long over drooping upper lip or lower lip, or they suffer from epilepsy or actually severe depression, quite interestingly, or their legs are bow-legged or knock-kneed, or they have six fingers and six toes. Those are the kind of things, you know, that we're talking about, these severely unusual physical conditions. So those are the kind of things that a person would object to. Again, we'll discuss in the next Mishnah, like how we didn't notice these things, but maybe, you know, we'll discuss that next, in the next Mishnah. But if she has any of those things, or as the Gemara adds, actually, there are another eight that are peculiar to women as opposed to the Kohanim, and which would also be considered to be women which are objectionable, and those eight are, she sweats profusely all the time, she has like terrible breath or some other bad body odor, she has a very unusually deep voice, she has like a mole, a large mole on her face, the size of a decent sized coin, or even she has a smaller mole on her face but it's got hair coming out of it, or she has some other kind of like, she has like a scar like from a dog bite, her breasts are really irregular shaped, one being a tefach, like 4 inches large than the other, or they're different or just they're disproportionately large. So in all those scenarios, those would be considered mumin, where if he claims that he didn't know She had these things, and it turns out she did. So then, even without a stipulation, so it's a situation of suffix. And if he claims that it's a mekachtos, it would indeed, we would misuffix, say it was mekachtos, and allow her to be divorced without getting her ksuba.